Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, we'll learn about what to feed your rabbit, a warning about dangers of human medication to your pets, and when is the best time to neuter your German Shepherd. But first, we'll start with this from Petcha.com. How the Blind Dog Alliance Saves Blind Dogs and Spreads Awareness. And this was written by Crystal Gibson. The Blind Dog Alliance focuses its mission on rescuing and educating others about blind dogs. Each year in the United States alone, hundreds of thousands of dogs are euthanized in shelters, many of whom never even had a chance at adoption. In order to make room for dogs who are deemed more easily adoptable, animal shelters will often immediately put down any stray or surrendered dogs with health issues or disabilities. And while more and more rescue groups specialized in saving these unadoptable dogs are popping up across the U.S. and Canada, there's one special group of volunteers and foster families that are focused solely on pulling blind or visually impaired dogs from high-kill shelters. All about the Blind Dog Alliance. Since 2009, the Blind Dog Rescue Alliance, a nonprofit 501c3, has rescued more than 500 dogs from shelters and other at-risk situations. The group has an impressive network of approximately 100 active and dedicated volunteers in the United States and in Canada, and one in New Zealand, who work together to identify and remove blind dogs from life-threatening environments and provide financial support to foster families. Our foster moms and dads are truly beyond compare, says BDRA President Sherry McCarran. Our foster homes build the healthy foundation and build trust and the ability for the dogs to love again. It is amazing what some of these dogs have been through, and yet they love. What makes blind dogs so special? What Sherry wants people to know is that blind and visually impaired dogs are just like other dogs and love to play with toys, run around, cuddle, and get excited to meet their owners at the door. She explains that along with training the dogs to know commands that could save her in an emergency while also establishing trust between the dog and the owner, many dogs acclimate very well to blindness and can map out familiar spaces to navigate without bumping into anything. The largest difference between a blind dog and a seeing dog is that you must be more responsible for their safety, she says. Maybe it's their low branches, tables with sharp edges, making sure they're safe from falling down stairs by installing a gate, allowing time for adjustment to changes in furniture placement, etc. These are easy fixes. The love you receive is worth any little inconveniences. As such, potential adopters shouldn't be afraid of welcoming a blind or visually impaired animal into their home, and BDRA has successfully adopted out many wonderful dogs into loving homes who would have certainly never had a chance in a shelter. BDRA success story, Pete. Pete is a dog who has been saved through BDRA. Dogs like Pete was found along a highway. Pete was found along a highway in Southern California with buckshots to the face. Pete had to have both eyes removed, but his story has a happy ending, as this spunky dog who can climb and run up and down stairs was nursed back to health and eventually adopted by his BDRA foster mom. For other dogs with particular health and behavior issues, as well as senior animals, BDRA runs a program to keep them as forever fosters in order to provide them with the love and specialized care they need for the time they have. Another BDRA success story, Quinn. Quinn the pit bull is one of these dogs who is spoiled with attention from her forever foster mom. Quinn came to BDRA after being found on a Craigslist ad, very often a death sentence for any dog, according to Sherry. She's totally blind and only has a partial brain due to hydrocephalus. thanks to the dedication and loving commitment of her foster family, Quinn, the medical miracle, has defied all odds and is a happy girl and crowd favorite at BDRA events. In some cases, BDRA will work closely with owners of blind or visually impaired dogs who can no longer care for them in order to rehome their pets. In this way, the owners keep their dogs at home in the time it takes for a new home to be found, and the dogs don't have to first be fostered by someone new and then later adopted by another new person. For Sherry, bringing support and awareness to people about the unique needs and qualities of blind dogs is part of BDRA's mission. At the end of the day, it all comes down to knowing we made a difference, she says. We have had 526 reasons and counting that motivate us to do what we do. A paw atop our hand, a peaceful pup safely asleep in our arms, that can't be bought, but it is the best gift ever. Blind dogs really do see with their hearts. And there's BDRA's very first rescue dog, Adam. In August of 2009, a six-year-old brown and white dog named Tex was awaiting imminent euthanasia at the Spalding County Animal Shelter in Georgia on a Monday morning at 9 a.m. when BDRA checked the shelter's website on Sunday and saw that Tex was no longer listed. They feared the worst, but Tex, known now as Adam, was very much alive, and Sherry, a BDRA volunteer in Wisconsin, offered to foster him just 30 minutes before his euthanasia deadline. Adam was ill with lungworm, but Sherry nursed him back to health, and he was later adopted. Today, Adam is happy and healthy and even has a sister adopted from BDRA. The Blind Dog Rescue Alliance is looking to extend its volunteer network, particularly in the western half of the U.S. and in Canada. For more information, you can visit blinddogrescue.org. Next, we hear a lot about the importance of neutering our pets as young as possible, but a recent study is challenging that practice in the case of certain dog breeds, particularly German Shepherds. In one article on the University of California at Davis or UC Davis website, Trina Wood writes, "Early neutering poses health risks for German Shepherd dogs, study finds. Joint disorders, a concern in German Shepherd dogs, might be less likely to occur if spaying or neutering procedures are delayed until the dog is at least 1 year old," the study suggests. Renowned for their intelligence, obedience, and loyalty, German Shepherd dogs are often the preferred breed for police and military work, as well as popular service dogs and family pets. But as most handlers, breeders, and veterinarians are aware, joint disorders are a big concern in these animals. A new study in the journal Veterinary Medicine and Science finds that neutering or spaying these dogs before 1 year of age triples the risk of one or more joint disorders, particularly for cranial cruciate ligament or CCLE tears. Debilitating joint disorders of hip dysplasia, CCL, and elbow dysplasia can shorten a dog's useful working life and impact its role as a family member, said lead investigator Benjamin Hart, a distinguished professor emeritus in the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. Simply delaying the spay-neuter until the dog is a year old can markedly reduce the chance of a joint disorder. Dog owners in the United States typically choose to spay or neuter their dogs prior to 6 months of age, in large part to prevent pet overpopulation or hoping to avoid unwanted behaviors. In Europe, however, neutering is generally avoided by owners and trainers and not promoted by animal health authorities, Hart said. During the past decade, some studies have indicated that spaying or neutering can have several adverse health effects for certain dog breeds. For example, a 2014 study published in PLOS ONE and also led by Hart examined the health records of over 1,000 golden retrievers and found a surprising fourfold increase in one or more joint disorders associated with spay or neuter before 1 year of age. In the same paper, joint disorders in Labrador retrievers, were found to be increased by just twofold in dogs spayed or neutered in the first year. For this current study, researchers examined veterinary hospital records over a 14.5-year period on 1,170 intact and neutered, including spayed, German Shepherd dogs for joint disorders and cancers previously associated with neutering. The diseases were followed through 8 years of age, with the exception of mammary cancer in females, which was followed through 11 years. The dogs were classified as intact, not neutered. Neutered before 6 months, neutered between 6 to 11 months, or neutered between 12 to 23 months and 2 to 8 years. Joint disorders and cancers are of particular interest because neutering removes male and female sex hormones that play key roles in important body processes such as closure of bone growth plates. 7% of intact males were diagnosed with one or more joint disorders, compared to 21% of males neutered prior to a year of age. In intact females, 5% were diagnosed with one or more joint disorders, while in females neutered prior to 1 year of age, this measure was significantly increased to 16%. Mammary cancer was diagnosed in 4% of intact females, compared with less than 1% in females neutered before 1 year of age. The occurrence of the other cancers followed through 8 years of age was not higher in the neutered than in the intact dogs. Urinary incontinence, not diagnosed in intact females, was diagnosed in 7% of females neutered before 1 year of age. In addition to dogs suffering pain from joint disorders, the condition may also disqualify the dog as a working partner in military and police work, Hart said. We hope these findings provide evidence-based guidelines for deciding the right age to neuter a puppy to reduce the risk of one or more joint disorders. Here is a quick summary. Neutering before 1 year of age triples the risk of some joint disorders. Urinary incontinence risks were elevated in female dogs spayed before age one. And previous studies also found early neutering risks for golden retrievers and Labrador retrievers. The research was supported by the Canine Health Foundation and donors to the Center for Companion Animal Health. And you can find this and other articles on the University of California Davis website at ucdavis.edu. And now for the portion of the program that I like to call Don't Eat That. The ASPCA warns about the dangers of human pain relievers and pets, how Prince the cat nearly lost his life. After suffering two life-threatening accidents in 1 day, Prince, a 10-month-old tabby, managed to pull through, thanks to his fast-acting owner and the staff at the ASPCA Animal Hospital, or AAH. It was a warm fall day when the 11-pound Prince tumbled out of his family's 6-story apartment in the Bronx, another high-rise accident common in cities like New York, where skyscrapers are the norm. After scrambling to collect Prince from the courtyard below, one of his family members gave him a dose of children's acetaminophen in hopes of alleviating any pain he might have sustained from the fall. Then they rushed him to the AAH. We got him to the hospital right away, says Cynthia M., whose 5-year-old daughter witnessed the fall. We were all very upset. What Cynthia didn't realize was that even though Prince sustained injuries from the fall, his reaction to the pain reliever would be much more serious. I was really worried about him initially, says Dr. Danielle Delfino, a hospital veterinarian who examined Prince. I was concerned that he might not make it. Acetaminophen, the ingredient in many over-the-counter pain relievers, is safe for humans, but animals, especially cats, are much more sensitive to this medication. Cats can't metabolize acetaminophen like humans do, says Dr. Camille DiClementi, vice president of the ASPCA Animal Hospital. That's what makes it so risky to cats. One extra strength acetaminophen dose can kill a cat if treatment is not started soon after ingestion, adds Dr. Tina Wismer, medical director of the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center, or APCC. Veterinarians at the ASPCA contacted the APCC about Prince's case, one of 4,073 that the APCC has consulted on this year, 2017. Human pain relievers and other over-the-counter medications, which encompass nearly 7,000 products, along with human prescription medications, account for the majority of toxicity cases reported to the APCC. According to Dr. DiClementi, another reason acetaminophen can be fatal to cats is that it can cause changes in the cat's red blood cells, which can't carry oxygen to vital organs. Symptoms of acetaminophen intoxication in cats may include blue or brown gums and trouble breathing, both of which Prince exhibited. The fall had also left him dull, dehydrated, and in shock. According to Dr. Delfino, Prince did not require surgery as his body absorbed the blood that had accumulated in his abdomen, but he was monitored closely for more fluid accumulation. Veterinarians also kept a close eye on his red blood cell count to assure that his anemia was improving. During the course of his five-day stay at the hospital, Prince had a laceration repaired on his lip, and he was treated with intravenous fluids, pain medication, a liver protectant medication, and oxygen support, while the acetaminophen intoxication specifically was treated with N-acetylcysteine. Luckily, with the support of everyone at the ASPCA, Prince made a full recovery from a situation that could have proven deadly. He did very well and became extremely friendly and attention-seeking once he was feeling better, reports Dr. Delfino. He's doing great, adds Cynthia. Since he's recovered, he's acting like a king. Cynthia also tells us that her family has also installed sturdy screens in their windows to avoid another high-rise incident. As of October, the AAH has seen 66 high-rise cases in 2017. Cynthia has also spread the word to warn friends and family about toxicity of human medications in pets. A good intention almost proved fatal, but you learn from every experience, says Dr. Delfino. Prince certainly is lucky in more ways than one. And now, rabbits are nuts about fruit. Your bunny has a sweet tooth. Should you indulge it? The Humane Society of the United States says, while many of us would prefer chocolate, most rabbits view fruit as nature's candy, and nothing will excite a rabbit quite like a fresh slice of apple or a piece of banana. Fruit is certainly full of nutrients, but because it's also high in sugar, it should be used as a treat rather than a part of every meal. Everything in moderation. Just as those of us with self-control limit our cookie intake, you should show restraint when giving your rabbit fruit. Bunnies love sweet stuff, and some can even become addicted, refusing to eat their own food. One or two small treats a day can provide nutrients and enrichment. Because of the high sugar and high starch content, treats should only be given in limited quantities. A slice of apple, a few blueberries, a small piece of banana, and of course, adjust the amount to match the size of your rabbit. Treats have their place. Treats can be very useful in training your rabbit and as a way of measuring his appetite. A rabbit's appetite is central to his digestive health and ultimately his overall health. By establishing a daily routine in which your rabbit gets a certain treat at a certain time, you can detect any potential problems. If a rabbit refuses his favorite treat, you may need to call your veterinarian. A word about carrots. Carrots are not a fruit, but they should also be considered a treat for your rabbits. While popular cartoon rabbits are constantly seen eating carrots, such a diet would be terrible for a real-life rabbit. Carrots are very starchy and should only be given in limited quantities. A carrot should never be the basis of a rabbit's diet, but a few baby carrots each day is fine. fruits to give your rabbit. Apple, without the stems or seeds. Blackberry, blueberry, cherry, no pits. Mango, melon, no seeds if applicable. Papaya, peach, no pits, of course. Pear, no stems or seeds. Raspberry and strawberry. Extra sweet fruits. These treats should only be given very sparingly because they're so high in sugar. Banana, 1 or 2 half-inch slices. Dried fruit, 2 or 3 raisins, a comparable amount for other dried fruits. Grapes, 1 or 2, and commercial treats. Many pet supply stores will sell a variety of commercial rabbit treats. For the most part, your rabbit is better off without such things. They're loaded with fat and sugar and are typically overprocessed. Fruits are natural, more nutritious, and less expensive. What about rabbits and vegetables? The Humane Society of the United States call to all rabbits, eat your veggies. Children may turn up their noses at the mere thought of vegetables, but most rabbits will always ask for seconds. Vegetables are an essential part of a rabbit's diet. They provide a variety of nutrients, extra water, and a whole lot of deliciousness. Introducing veggies. If your rabbit's diet doesn't currently include any vegetables, it's important to introduce them slowly. Provide small amounts of one new vegetable each day to see how they react. New vegetables can cause soft secotropes, which may be hard for rabbits to ingest. This usually goes away after a few days, but in case soft cecal pellets persist, call your veterinarian. For those rabbits who already get vegetables on a daily basis, new veggies should still be introduced slowly and one at a time. Organic. It's ideal to feed your rabbit organic vegetables whenever possible. Some of the pesticides or other chemicals used to treat conventionally grown veggies can be toxic to rabbits. Growing some or all of your own organic vegetables is great if you have the option. Preparing rabbit salads. Always wash vegetables before giving them to your rabbit. Even if they're homegrown and organic, a quick rinse can get rid of dirt and other impurities. Non-organic vegetables should always be rinsed thoroughly in cold water. Even though your grocer may wash veggies before putting them up for sale, washing them at home ensures the removal of all pesticides and other chemicals. Because different vegetables have different nutrients, a rabbit should get at least 3 different vegetables each day. However, 3 lettuces don't make a great meal, so try to choose 3 very different vegetables. Also, mix up the vegetables each time you run out. Of course, when introducing new vegetables, go slowly as noted. The size of your rabbit salad will depend on the size of your rabbit. Ideally, your rabbit will eat 1 to 2 cups of veggies per 5 pounds of body weight per day. This can be broken up into multiple meals. If you're not sure, consult with your veterinarian about appropriate quantities. The V list. V stands for veggies. Lettuce. Butter, Bibb, and Boston, the green and red versions. Leaf. Both green and red, romaine and red romaine lettuces, and arugula. Also basil, bok choy, broccoli, carrot tops, the green part, celery cut into small pieces, cilantro, collard greens, dandelion greens, endive or endive, kale, mustard greens, radicchio, radish tops, radish bottoms are root vegetables which are too high in starch, Swiss chard, any color, and watercress. Vegetables to limit. Celery, because it's not as nutrient-dense as other vegetables. Mint, any kind but pennyroyal. The menthol in spearmint and peppermint can relax the intestinal walls in people and other animals, aiding with certain digestive problems. However, because of the rabbit's unique digestive system, this would be a potentially negative effect, though there's no science on this yet. Parsley. Rabbits usually prefer the taste of the flat leaf variety. Parsley may initially cause some liquid in secotropes. and spinach. The substances in spinach reduce the availability of its calcium. Vegetables to avoid: corn. It's too high in starch to be part of a healthy rabbit's diet. Iceberg lettuce is nutrient weak compared to other lettuces. In addition, its high water content can cause diarrhea, so your bunny is better off without it. Also avoid peas and pennyroyal mint because that's toxic. And potatoes. What about rabbits and water? The Humane Society of the United States says encourage your bunny's good drinking habits. Besides nutritious food, your rabbit needs plenty of clean water. Insufficient water consumption can cause serious health problems in rabbits, such as bladder stones. Rabbits can drink from either a bowl or a sipper bottle. The challenge is to make sure your rabbit has constant access to fresh water while keeping his environment dry. Choosing a bowl. Your rabbit's water bowl should be made of ceramic or metal. Plastic bowls can scratch easily, and those scratches can become homes for unhealthy bacteria. Change and refill the water regularly and keep an eye out for loose hay, fur, or other debris that may fall into the bowl. A quick rinse and refill several times a day will keep the bowl clean and your rabbit happy. Watch out for spillage and try to wipe up wet spots immediately. Hay or food that sits in water for extended periods of time can develop mold, which is hazardous to your rabbit's health. Sipper bottles. If you choose to use a sipper bottle, make sure your rabbit understands how it works. Some rabbits may be used to drinking from a bowl, and it can take some time to acclimate them to a sipper. Be sure to change the water in the sipper bottle daily. Clean the bottle and check the sipping mechanism each day to make sure it's working and isn't blocked with hay. Check also for leaks underneath the bottle. A leaky bottle is often a sign that the sipper mechanism is clogged. So there you have it. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thank you for listening. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.